My name is Beth Charpentier. I'm very pleased to be here, and I'm very happy you all could join us today. I work with Global Health Access Program, and we're located in Maesat, Thailand, and we have an administrative office in Berkeley, California as well. Today I'll be talking about community-based delivery of childhood interventions in conflict zones in eastern Burma. The specific program will be the Karen Department of Health and Welfare's Village Health Worker Program. I have no relationships to disclose. So first off, Global Health Access Program, we increase capacity of community-based organizations promoting health inside Burma. These may be health organizations or women's organizations or youth organizations that all are focusing on health in some way or another. We provide technical support and capacity building. We work primarily in the eastern Thai-Burma border, but we also have work with organizations in the northern Burma-China border, as well as the Burma-India border in the west. So first off, Burma is a country in Southeast Asia. They have a very diverse population. What you'll notice, they have over 100 ethnic groups. In the middle here, you mostly have the Burman majority ethnic group, and then all along the outside, you have all of the ethnic groups. It's been a military dictatorship since 1962, and this has resulted in widespread human rights abuses across the country, including forced labor, forced conscription, rape, torture, and confiscation of land and food. They also have especially poor health, national health status. Less than 2% of the government expenditure is on health, and they were ranked second worst health system in the world in 2000 by WHO, second to Sierra Leone. Also, I want to point out that the expenditures for health are mainly targeted for the Burman majority in the cities, not the ethnic groups along the border. So eastern Burma specifically, it's been a conflict area for the past 60 years since Burma gained independence from England. And this has resulted in an estimated 500,000 internally displaced persons. Also, a third of the households experienced at least one human rights abuse in the previous year. In response to this, because there's no government programs or the government programs that exist are prohibitively expensive, ethnic community-based health organizations have been established and they were able to serve 376,000 people in the last year. One of these health organizations is the Karen Department of Health and Welfare. They have a 100,000 target population, which includes about 95% IDPs, again, internally displaced persons. I'm not gonna go through the list, but you can take a look at it. These are all of the clinics, or I'm sorry, the programs that they run. They're not everywhere, but they are, they exist where the stability and the access and the staff allow them to. Specifically, I'm gonna be talking about the Village Health Worker Program. So here's a little background on the health status of eastern Burma. We know that Burma's health is very poor, and we know that eastern Burma is a conflict zone. So you put those two together, and the health status is extremely poor. Here, I just want to point out the under 5 mortality rate in eastern Burma is twice Burma's national figure. You can also see it compared to the MDG target for 2015 and neighboring Thailand. And here, preventable deaths account for 60% of the deaths for children under 5. The clinics are running and they're able to treat these diseases. The problem is getting people to the clinics who are living in the very rural areas. It can take a day or two to get to the clinics, and the clinics, the hike to get there can be through jungle and mountains, and it's made even worse by the rainy season. So what happens is that maybe a family will go there when it's unnecessary, and then they are told you can just treat this at home, and they feel discouraged and they don't return, or they go to the clinic when it's really too late and the symptoms have progressed and it's hard for the clinic to do anything. The previous efforts to deal with this were clinic-based community health workers traveling to villages. So this means they would kind of make a circuit and they would get to as many villages as possible, but when they were there, they were able to treat the children that they saw, but they also missed a lot of children. In addition, getting to the villages was difficult due to the terrain and the security roadblocks and rivers that might be blocked by the Burma army and you're not allowed to pass. In addition to time, they're working in the clinic and then they're also making these visits around to the villages. So if they're there, they're there for maybe a day and they do what they can, but they just can't do that much. So discussions began in 2008 about what to do about this and how they can have a reach beyond what they're currently able to reach. So some of the important, this is discussions between Global Health Access Program, which is my organization, and Karen Department of Health and Welfare. They had the director, the program coordinator, several of the clinic in charges came for these meetings as well. What they decided was that we really needed to avoid the top-down clinic-based structure. So what was ideal was to have a network of VHWs who were already rooted in the community and would be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are there for the villagers. This is also really important because these communities are being displaced very often. This village health worker will be able to continue to remain with the community as they're displaced from their village if that happens. Second, they really needed a way to build trust and interest. And the way we did this was because the people who are going to be recruited were really just lay villagers, like, I mean, no special health background. We decided, KDHW decided that the way to jumpstart the respect and confidence in this person was to have them like give out medical services, I guess. So with dehydration and diarrhea, they're distributing zinc, and so it's a way to kind of build that trust in the community of this village health worker. In addition, we really wanted to focus on villagers' ownership of the program. And make this be an active process, not that there's a village health worker who's telling everyone what to do, but that there's a village health worker to facilitate discussion and get people talking about health and what they know and what they want to know and what they can do. Next, even though malaria is the number one cause of child death in eastern Burma, we decided that it made more sense to start with dehydration and diarrhea. First of all, it's the second leading cause, and also basic interventions can prove very effective. So it would be a nice foundation for adding more programs in the future. So here are the program design goals. You can just take a look at them. I'll go quickly. Here's the structure. So we have a program coordinator who I worked with on a day-to-day basis. Her name is Hekua, and she had an assistant named Weberpa. So they are in charge of the everyday tasks. So this is developing curriculum and training, leading the trainings, monitoring, supply procurement, field visits, information system, grant management, coordination with other CBOs, and advocacy efforts. We have 15 supervisors, and they are to support the VHWs. They have one supervisor per area, and the area, the supervisor will have between 3 and 15 VHWs. They are responsible for helping. Oh my God. Okay, so let's keep going. 195. Village health workers, we have 195, about 40,000 villagers. And what we wanted to emphasize here is that in order to effectively target children, you really have to address the health concerns of the entire community. Okay, so schedule baseline survey was done in 2008. Level one interventions began in April 2009, and then we had an assessment to see which villagers were ready, which VHWs were ready to move to the next level. Malaria started in April 2010. ARI, acute respiratory infections, will start in April 2011. Then another assessment, and then we'll move to level three, which is focusing on more community organizing and additional interventions. Here are the key components of the interventions. These are all from WHO's IMCI, Integrated Management of Childhood Illness. What you can see here, this is a villager being taught how to make ORS. So this happened at a house visit, and here this is a discussion between VHW and this is actually a supervisor and somebody from the village came in to assist with the training. So here's the criteria. We'll just go through this quickly. You can take a look at it. Here, I just want to point out the tippy tap. So this is a way to have running water. It's awesome. here's the responsibilities. As I said, the main portion of their job is just to support the VHWs. We have other programs with KDHW where we have village health workers who support the medics or the CHWs, and this is totally upside down, the opposite way. So they conduct trainings, they do site visits to visit each VHW. They spend one day observing house visits and reviewing the data, talking about problems, and they also provide encouragement. Supervisors are also responsible for assessments where they talk with the VHW, they look at their recording data, how well they're doing that, and they also talk with the village leader to check on the security, the transportation, and just to make sure that there's still interest in the village for this program. Assuming that's okay, they'll move to the next level. They are also responsible for documenting all of their site visits and supply inventory. We'll keep going. So here are the village health workers. This is their criteria. This was all decided on by KDHW with Global Health Access Program. As you can see, there it's very basic education. We really wanted it to be, anyone from the village who was interested in this could step up and be a part of it. So here's the outline of their responsibilities. This is Hekua, the program coordinator. This is at one of the trainings. So home visits, it's not teaching. It's not do this, 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 and this, and your child will be okay. It's dialogue, and we really wanted to focus on that with the VHWs. Here you see, this is one of the activities called Germs Are Invisible, and they have powder, and so you go to the bathroom and your hands are dirty, and then you pick up a cookie, and then you see with mouth and hands and how the transmission happens. This is a really exciting one that the villagers really enjoyed. These are all pretty fairly new topics for them, so it was nice to be able to have these interactive activities to explain all of this. Here's a game that they came up with about malaria and net. Using ITNs, and then here is, again, making ORS. The VHWs also, they screen for diarrhea and fever for malaria, and then they also check for severe symptoms in order to make referrals to the clinic. Okay, here's some of the community education events that we've had. And here's the data form that we used. Just go through this quickly. So here's some of the results so far. I just wanted to point out the zinc distribution was up from, this is zinc distribution when diarrhea was present in one of the household members. So it was 39% the first term and 86% the second term. This is due to some VHWs who weren't exactly clear on the protocol, as well as some supply chain issues that we worked out in term two, which is exciting. And you also see here community events almost doubled in the second term. This was due to an emphasis on it in the training, saying, well, we saw, community events weren't happening so much, let's brainstorm ideas and work to increase this. So it happened, very exciting. So here is kind of what's going on with the program right now. Can you just take a look at these and here, so level one is dehydration and diarrhea, and level two is malaria control. About 50% of the VHWs are doing that right now, and we're hoping to move more VHWs to level two fairly soon. We know that several are ready. The problem is that we wanted to hold off until after the elections to see what the security situation would be, which was a very good idea because in the last couple of days, 15,000 people have fled Burma in this eastern area to Thailand when fighting broke out again. So we're going to try, we're aiming for January to begin level two in these other areas. Also, data return has been incredibly successful for a program that's working in these really rural villages. The 4% that we haven't returned, data was lost in a clinic that was burned, and also a messenger that was coming from Eastern Burma to the headquarters in Thailand. Something didn't work out and they didn't get it. But overall, it's been very successful, and this is testament to the supervisors that are going to each place to pick up data and bring it back to Thailand every 6 months. So also educational materials, they've gotten very creative, and we were able to produce a health education karaoke VCD, which is incredible. We had a training at one of the refugee camps, which happened to have a recording studio and film editing software there. So Yeah, it was really great. We put it all together, and now it's been distributed all through Eastern Burma. Karaoke is very popular with the Karen people, so this was a great way to really get to people and get them excited about health. So obstacles, biggest one is continued attacks. It's really hard for the health workers to go around doing these site visits. They've come up with really creative ways to work around this, but with more continued attacks, it means the villagers are getting being forced to more and more rural areas or having to flee to Thailand, and it's difficult. So communication, again, we're trying to, because that one data set was lost in transit, we're trying to put together better systems for communication. As well as that, we are trying to aim for checking in once a month. And so this may be through a messenger, or it may be through a satellite phone or something like that. Okay. And turnover is always a problem, but we've implemented 2-month warning systems so that they can train the next person coming up. And adjusting to new roles is difficult because this is a very new kind of program of interactive approaches. Okay, here are the conclusions. You can just take a look at that, yay. And the future plans, border security situation is always number one. And MCP, once we fully integrate with the malaria control program, we'll have basic interventions for malaria for a target population of 70,000 people, which is very exciting. In addition, lymphatic filariasis, tuberculosis, vitamin A and deworming, and immunization program, we hope to add those in the future. And a 2-year follow-up survey will be done in April 2011. And here's a video I have that's really cute, but I'm not sure if we have time. No time. Okay, but this is, it's in Karen, and little kids are singing it, and it's adorable, and they love it. And these are the acknowledgments, and here are the supervisors. Thank you very much.
Sorry for going over.
Thank you so much, Beth. It was great. No, stand up here, because Beth was the last one, but she does, will entertain 2 questions, and before we open it up to the entire group for.
I have a question. You said 96% data recovery. Mm-hmm.
This is all paper-based. We're looking into the technologies, but right now it's a little bit too expensive. That's actually one of the problems, because if you're stopped and you have these data forms with you, you'll get arrested. This is it's ridiculous, but it's illegal to be a health worker. So yeah, but they've been very creative in finding solutions. Oftentimes, if they think that they might be attacked, they will take the data forms and they'll put them either maybe at a monastery or in a specific bamboo tree in the jungle that they can return to later. So they really worked really hard to figure out contingency plans for the data if something happens.
Great question. Second question. Back in the back.
Yeah, exactly. You used community health events, or community events, as one of your processes. Are those standardized, the events? It'd be nice to understand what the actual events were.
Yeah, so what? It's not very standardized. We are stressing being creative. So what we have on the data form that was a couple of slides back, there's a section that says, please explain your community health event. You have a box for how many people attended, and they're given instructions on key components to include. So if it's targeting a specific audience, mothers or children or full communities or whatever, they're told to explain in detail. And so we've been entering that, and we may try to standardize it in the future, but as of right now, we're really just trying to get the community events to happen, and then we'll tweak it later as we see what's actually going on.
Okay. Thanks, Beth. Thanking Beth for this presentation. Okay, shall we now open it up for questions for the 4 presenters? It's been a lot of information that's been presented.
What exactly a good feeding relationship is, because I understood all the other terms,
but I don't really like a good feeding relationship that you try to foster that or to teach people what that is.
Are you directing it toward David?
Yes.
I think it's okay to.
An attentive relationship, actually, where the caregiver or the mother is actively paying attention to the child and giving it attention and ensuring that the child's eating well. In breastfeeding, among, say, depressed mothers or actually just busy mothers, it's not unusual to find mothers who are not giving, even in a breastfeeding situation, not giving much attention to the child and is actually doing something else. If the mother has to go back to work early, then breastfeeding might be terminated early as well, and the child would be left to be fed by older siblings or by someone else in the family. The food could be inappropriate, attention might not be paid, older children may eat the food of a younger child, the child might be expected to eat when they really don't have the skills to eat well on their own. So there's a whole number of things actually one could think about that may seem obvious to many folks, but actually in kind of resource-constrained situations, under stress, it's frequently not addressed.
Great. Thank you.
Here? All of you to be congratulated on really great projects, but I'm wondering where the money came from. Talk about the funding.
Sure, I'll start. We are funded by a Swiss foundation called Child's Dream, and so we put the program together, put together a budget, submitted it to them, and they approved it. And this will happen every 2 years, hopefully for as long as possible.
Bonnie? This is a research I've done on my own. The EASA part was a part of my fellowship that I did with EASA, so I didn't have any funding or anything. But all the implications, the suggestions that I have, that I'm seeking funding to actually implement in the field and see which of these actually work and how well they work.
Carrie?
For a lot of our program, it's been very volunteer-based. The Harvard undergraduates have applied for different grants for their travel, but their time is volunteer-based, as is mine, as is the other people working at MGH and the people working at the hospital. A lot of our supplies are kind of donated randomly, and the other money that we've had has come from small private donors with the plan to have this financially sustainable.
David?
Our initial activity was supported by major donors who are individuals, mostly from the United States, who contribute to Child Fund International. And they are theme specific, and we're now seeking additional funding in Senegal. We will get some USAID mission support through the Office of Health in Indonesia, and the Private Food Foundation, and in Kenya, we're not sure.
Okay, good question. I think you had your hand up.
Yes, if you could speak a little bit more to some of the specific, you mentioned some really creative and impressive methods to get around some of the conflict setting. I wonder if you could speak even more to that, particularly how you accomplish supervisory visits.
Okay, sure. I, as a foreigner, don't know all of the ins and outs of Karen State, so that's something that KDHW and the program coordinators and the director of KDHW, they really are in charge of that part of it. So I know small part, mostly what I said already, and I don't know too much else. What you're talking in terms of security or in terms of education?
In terms of really both. In terms of security.
Okay, security I don't know much about. Education, I do. I personally have an English teaching background, so I've worked with foreign students for a very long time, and so we just really based it as much on interaction as possible and demonstrations and just having it, be as interactive as possible. Because we have the activities that we have for level one and level two interventions. You saw the germs are invisible. We also have something about clean water. And these are mostly just things that we found even online and then brought them to KDHW, say, what do you think about this? Would this work with the current population? And tweaked it as necessary or dropped it altogether, depending on what the supervisors and program coordinators believe.
I have a question. I've been involved with child survival for many years and have been a reviewer, and I'm aware of many of the resources that have been developed for child survival. Do you use these? Do you have access to them, and do you use them frequently?
We use a lot of job aids. They're pictorial, very easy to use, and we usually find something that's been made for another population and use it in a Karen way. So we'll change the pictures and we'll just tailor it to a Karen population.
For example, Core Group sends out, you know, these emails, four or five a day, this resource, that thing. Do you have a history of using those? Do you know of them? Have you seen them? Are they helpful?
For me, I think the Core Group is a fantastic resource. And I highly recommend it to anybody to look at. There are a lot of materials online, great contacts with membership organizations, people very willing to share that information. I find it incredibly rich.
Okay. Anybody else?
We haven't used the Core Group, but kind of like Beth, a lot of the stuff that we've been able to get from other organizations, we just adapt locally.
Okay.
And a lot of our undergraduate students are very creative in being able to do that.
Okay. Thanks. Other questions? The ladies back there want to ask anything? You too. Okay. Okay, good question. Really good question.
I think it's extremely important, and whenever there's an opportunity to engage dads, that should happen. At Child Fund, I think it most frequently happens in terms of reproductive health issues. But in Honduras, for example, fathers are often the decision makers about who access health care because of the perceived cost of that. So, fathers, the messages need to get to fathers, and fathers need to be engaged in understanding the value of healthcare and how it's used. So I think fathers need to be engaged whenever and however they can. In an enhanced growth promotion situation, usually it is the mother who brings the child, but we're careful to call them caregivers, right? Because it might not be the mom. It might be a grandmother. It might be the father. And messages are shaped to be shared.
That's a good question. A final question before we wrap up?
I'd like to say one thing. If anyone's interested, all of that video, as well as all of the karaoke videos, are also on YouTube. So my card's on the table back there, or you can speak with me after the presentation. I can give you more information about that. Thank you.
Okay, well, what we'll do is we'll wrap up. It's 2 o'clock, I think. No? Or am I ahead of myself? Okay. But if you'd like to talk with any of the speakers or interact among yourselves, please. Thanks so much for attending. A final round of applause for the presenters. Thank you.